Welcoming everyone to the Longhorn Republic, your source for Texas Longhorn news, sports, and opinions with a bit of snark built in. We are a podcast of Burn Orange Nation, and you can find more great Texas Longhorn content over at burnorangenation.com. If you like what we do, please leave us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts. Help get the show out there. Share this with your friends where you found it, whether it was Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spotify, anywhere where you find fine podcast content. You can find Kyle and myself. Connect with us on social media at Longhorn Pod on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic, or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. My name is Gerald Goodridge. I'm your host this week, like I am every week. And I'm joined by a man who simultaneously loves and hates second chances.
Love it.
Kyle Carpenter. Kyle, how are you?
Gerald, I love a second chance. I don't ever hate a second chance. I legitimately don't. I hate that a second chance is making me nervous for a basketball game, right? We'll talk a little bit about that. But my life philosophy is I genuinely believe in second chances. We have talked offline about certain writers for other schools who make outlandish claims, and when they're a certain age in their early 20s, we all got second chances for our ridiculous and horrendous takes, and now we have, a wildly successful podcast, Gerald, that is our second chance after, TSTV and the 40 acres and probably ridiculous phases of youth. So second chances I believe in, but only when they benefit me. Let's be honest.
I think that's fair. That checks out with you, Kyle. Based on everything everyone knows about you. No, honestly, that was just a joke to bring in Sean Miller. We're doing our Xavier preview today. Texas faces off with the Musketeers, formerly of the A-10, now of the Big East, at least. That'd be weird to like leave a school and then come back and they're in a different conference. Anywho, so Xavier is Texas's opponent in the Sweet 16. Texas is in the Sweet 16 for the first time since 2008, when Kyle and I walked those illustrious 40 acres. The Musketeers, 28-9 on the year, 15-5 on the season, got through the first two rounds of the NCAA tournament thanks to a tight win in the first round and then absolutely shellacking a Pittsburgh team that probably shouldn't have been there in the first place. But Sean Miller is a heck of a basketball coach, and got Xavier back to the Sweet 16, the same spot where he left them, 2009, so like 14 years ago.
He's a heck of a coach, right? He went to Arizona for 12 years or so, three Elite Eights, two Sweet 16s. He was the successor to legendary Lute Olson. Probably wouldn't have gone anywhere had he not been caught up in one of those NCAA recruiting scandals, which pre-NIL, I think it was 27-18 when they had to vacate some of their wins, or all of their wins, in fact. But look, it's for the memories. Sean Miller's a really fascinating guy, right? Like his dad was his coach. He was a ball handling savant, so much so that he went on the Johnny Carson show when he was 14. He was in the Fish That Saved Pittsburgh with Dr. J. He played at Pittsburgh, the team he just knocked out of the tournament. I don't know how many people there are that fit this bill, but he's a three-time gold medalist as a member of USA Basketball, once as a player, once as an assistant coach, and once as a head coach of USA Basketball. So, he's a good coach. That's the long and short of it. This is an interesting team because I wonder if he just knows how to win. I wonder if it wasn't him, if they had the talent to make it to there. This is one of those examples where a coach definitely put a team over the top. It almost looked like from the start of this tournament that it's going to take a couple years to rebuild them to their former magic. I think he went to the Sweet 16 in his last year there, and I think the year before that he might have gone to the Elite Eight. Like, they had a crazy little run there for a little while at Xavier. But Gerald, before we dive in, I meant to ask you this right off the top. Can you name another school other than Xavier that sounds more like a 90s R&B singer?
Duquesne.
Ooh, dang, you had that one ready.
Locked,
okay,
locked and ready to go.
Listeners, I don't think you understand just how impressive this man is, Gerald. I am legitimately smiling.
I had Duquesne on a two-sided cassette tape in my Walkman. No,
But Xavier, right? It sounds like a 90s R&B artist. It's not. It's, in fact, a university in Cincinnati. The Musketeers, one of the great mascots of college basketball, along with the Providence Friars. A storied school that, you know, one of those mid-majors that you don't really hear about except March Madness, and they're here. But as I started to say, they almost didn't make it out of the opening round. I thought that there was an upset of brewing.
So, yeah, that Kennesaw State one was I mean, I was cheering for it. Like, I think a lot of us were. We all, I'm the weird person that, like, cheers against my financial interest generally in the NCAA tournament. So seeing them kind of squeak it by Kennesaw after trailing at halftime, you know, and they, Xavier has that weirdly, like, shallow rotation where they only really play six dudes. So, like, if, you know, two of them are off on any given night, things can go sideways really quickly. And so, I think we were all cheering for that. And so it didn't happen. And then, you know, Pitt took advantage of Iowa State being suspect in some ways, but also just playing probably its worst game of the last three-ish months, maybe. And Pitt was not as good as Xavier. And I think that's why the numbers next to their names exist. And so there's a big halftime lead, kind of just cruised out of it. All their starters did what they do. All of them scored double digits. So, like, it was a relatively ho-hum second-round game for them. But that first one, I think they got scared. And maybe there's a recipe in there for Texas to follow.
Yeah, for sure. And you know, just a reminder that it's very rare, always interesting when a coach plays their against their alma mater in the tournament. So he played at Pitt, but Sean Miller getting a win over Pitt was another interesting wrinkle to that. I definitely had Iowa State in that matchup in my bracket. I think in half of my picked Xavier to win, half I picked Iowa State, but I did not necessarily have Pitt making it there. Kennesaw State's first ever tournament game, by the way, they were leading at halftime. So a real Cinderella, but that's not who we're playing, right? We are playing Xavier, and They have a lineup, like Gerald said. They play six players pretty much. They play their starters a ton. They have three dudes who don't leave the court. They'll play however many minutes the game goes, pretty much. UTEP transfer Suli Boom excels at the point. He shoots 42.5% from 3-point range. He scores 16.5 points a game, 4.5 assists, 4 rebounds. Just a good player. I wonder if he was coached by Rodney Terry in his UTEP time. I'd have to look at that. Probably not. Maybe he came after. Maybe he recruited him. I don't know. Versatile 6'6 junior Colby Jones is their second leading scorer, 15 points per game, 5 rebounds, 4 assists. Again, just two guards who can do a lot. They have another third guard, senior guard Adam Kunkel, who absolutely a great name. And also, like, we had Funk, now Kunk, in back-to-back games. We had Funk for Penn State. Kunkel is a guy who can get hot and just kind of beat you from the 3-point.
Are you saying we need Kunk to have the funk?
Agreed. He was 5-for-8 against Pittsburgh from behind the line, right? Like, that's he didn't hit any twos in that game, was 0-for-3 from inside the arc, but 5-for-8 is Jabari Ricean territory. So we were hoping to have a third straight game where we cool at least one shooter, if not multiple. The fourth of their kind of big four is 7 foot, give him his full credit, center Jack Nunge, who had 10 double doubles, averaged 14 and just about 8 per year. So a 7-footer is always an interesting thing in the tournament. We saw Texas when they had to play 2 against Purdue. We saw a DSU game where he could be the dominant big. And then we saw some not as talented, but just big bigs for our opening game against Colgate that gave us a little trouble. So it'll be really interesting how the somewhat similar game plan almost to Colgate with shooters and a big man inside and how Texas defends it. If they do similar, this will be a good test for the praises that we've given Rodney Terry.
Yeah, and I think, you know, there are a couple of keys to the game that we've identified in the show notes, but anytime an opposing team has a big man that can play and that can crash the boards, I'm always curious to see what Texas can do against that. Is it a Dylan DSU game? Is it Timmy Allen had his work cut out for him in the first couple of rounds? So I'm curious to see. That was our concern early in the season, was like, what does Texas do against teams with legit big men? And they did okay against Gonzaga. I say okay. They did well against Gonzaga early in the season. And Gonzaga probably has I don't want to say elite big man, but a tested big man, we'll say it like that. So, like,
Drew, put some respect on his name. Drew Timmy is an elite college big man. I think he's probably going to be learning a second language soon when he goes to play overseas, but he's going to make
he's going to be the Serbian all-star for sure.
Absolutely. There will be songs written about him in Serbian. So wherever he goes,
he's going to get the Corey Maggette in Greece reception. If you haven't seen that video, by the way, when Corey Maggette, if you don't remember him from like the early 2000s, he played in Greece for a year. They lit flares in the airport welcoming him to play in Greece. It's just incredible. But, like, yes, Drew Timmy is an elite. And, like, there are the tiers of elite when you think about college basketball. You think about, like, your lottery pick guys that are elite, and then you're, like, you know, seventh-year centers, Drew Timmy, elite. But, like, you know, Texas did well against that. But that is, again, going to be something that I'm going to watch because it's plagued Texas in a couple of spots this year where if they're not able to spread the floor and they're not able to – and we saw it a little bit in the first two rounds where – the zone defense gives them a little bit of an issue getting the ball down low. Those are going to be things to watch for in this matchup outside of what we have dubbed our three keys to the game.
Yeah, and look, Colgate has a good coach, a good solid coach who probably will get a job somewhere. He's done well in the Patriot League for a few years. Penn State has, you know, a great coach who's out of the Brad Stevens kind of Celtics tree. Probably on to bigger things, if not, you know, this year, then in the short future will be a hot name. But, you know, this is, you're talking a really, really established, really great, long track record, phenomenal coach who they're going up against. So, you know, Rodney Terry's got his work cut out for him, and all the things we can identify, surely they can identify as well, what the zone was able to do to us to slow down hot offense, you know, what Texas countered and was very specific and a bit one-dimensional in their game. Completely, in fact, one-dimensional in their game plan against Penn State. They executed flawlessly, but they were one-dimensional. I'll take the offense, Gerald. You can take the defense if you want. On our keys, our first key is Texas shooting the three. Xavier struggles to defend the three-point line. They're 282nd in the nation. That's the only real major weakness for this team. That's, you know, they went 8-6 versus quad one teams. It wasn't like being out of, you know, a no name conference just because they're not a team you hear as much about. They had a good, you know, prep. They've won two tournament games. They're a good team. You have to leave it point blank there. But they are not a good team at defending the 3-point line. And so, you know, teams that can take advantage of that can do something. Pittsburgh stayed in that game a little while where they're hitting threes. They ended up 6-for-20. If they could have hit a few more, maybe it was a little bit closer. Kennesaw State wasn't able to take advantage of it. They were 2-for-12. They're not a great three-point shooting team generally. So Texas will certainly be the best three-point shooting team that that they've seen, Xavier has seen. And so we talked about it a little bit in our recap show earlier this week. We don't expect a 13 three-pointer game and one player, Jabari Rice or anyone else, to have seven, right? We don't need that. Carr hits a couple. It would be great. They did it against Gonzaga, and that made it a really nice win, right? When Texas shoots like that, they're so good at everything else that they're almost unbeatable. They are national champions if they can shoot like that. But again, shooting that well is hard to do every game when you aren't consistently always that, right? They're a little bit up and down. And you saw that in the tournament, right? They don't have to hit 13, but they can't hit one, right? If they only hit 1-3, I don't know how they win this game, right? I also don't know how a team in 2023 wins back-to-back tournament games when only making 1-3. Got to be close to a record, right? The 1-for-13 and you still win in the second round that Texas did against Penn State. So they have to hit, right? And they're going to get looks. And you know, Jabari Rice is the guy who everyone is expecting something from. We've seen rare kind of off games where, you know, Hunter had a little bit, especially earlier in the year. Can he rekindle that? We know Marcus Carr is going to take some threes. Can he hit them, right? The Marcus Carr matrix is the more you say, oh, no, terrible shot, the more likely it is to go in. So can he get some ugly ones where they'll, of course, go in? But, you know, can we get 5, 6, 7, 8, you know, if we get to that number of three-pointers, 9, 10, I feel really, really good. And they're going to get looks if the ball movement is there. And even if they go, you know, to a zone, whatever it is, you don't want Timmy Allen shooting. But the way Dylan Dessou has been shooting the ball, he's a it's a little bit unconventional, but it goes in pretty well, three-point shooter. So he might even get a look or two, but I like him being our man down low. And then don't forget the Big 12's leading three-point percentage shooter. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, Brock Cunningham. Are we in play for a Brock game where an Xavier team that only plays six men is, you know, looking for a scrappy Timmy and Brock to throw some elbows, bang for some rebounds, maybe, you know, really wear some guys out, and then on the other end, Brock sneaks in and hits 3 for 4 three-pointers for 9 points and does it all in, you know, a six-minute span. Maybe. I hope so. That'd be beautiful. But whoever it is, Texas is going to need to step up. I do expect Jabari Rice to be better than he was in game two. I don't think game one is a realistic expectation, but I expect him to have a bounce back.
Yeah, and I think Texas is going to have to keep up, and this will go with our next thing, but Xavier's going to try to fill up the basket. And I think we've seen Texas be successful when they run and when they hit fast break threes and when they do those types of things. So our second key is Texas defending the three. Xavier ranks nationally eighth in offensive efficiency, largely thanks to the fact that they hit basically 40% from perimeter, 39.5%. They're third in the nation, which is a big number. And we saw that. That was a concern of ours, maybe less so against Colgate, but Xavier's going to do is going to try to fill up the bucket from beyond the arc. And so Texas has to clamp that down. And Texas could have guys get hot. They've got guys. We saw it again in the first game. Jabari Rice only made one shot from inside the arc, right? Marcus Carr has had his nights. So Texas, even Brock Cunningham will hit a three here and there. So Texas has the guys, but instead of getting into a shooting match with Xavier, Xavier probably wins that game. So you really have to figure out how do you limit them or chase them off the line or force them into less comfortable shots from beyond the arc, because that's what they're going to try to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Texas in the postseason has been really, really good. They've been, phenomenally good at keeping people off. And they're kind of getting the third straight game with a team that is, I don't want to say live or die, but their winning game plan involves them making three-point shots, right? I think this is a team with some shooters who aren't small, right? They have a lot of medium to large size guys who can shoot and get their shot off. So it'll be curious. Texas is just really going to have to stick to them. I don't know that they, Boom is a good point guard. I don't know if he's going to get the dribble penetration that you saw that Pickett could get kind of at will. So it'll be a little bit different. It's not necessarily drive and kick. There will be some of that, but they play a little bit inside out with some kickouts. They have good ball movement. It's just well coached offense, and so they're gonna get their shots. But Texas has been very, very good, right? Very elite when you consider they played a good Kansas team and a TCU team with a really elite guard, right, and Mike Miles, who they have shut down, right, a NBA first round draft pick, talented guard, and they've shut him down. They shut down Pickett, who's an All American guard. So they've shown they can take the thing that a team wants to do away, whether that's 3-point shooting, whether that's one ball dominant guard to really facilitate the offense. They've given some teams fits with their defense, and Texas is in the five postseason games, averaging 58 points allowed, 38% from the field, 26% from 3-point are really, really, really good numbers. Actually, digging in, you go back a little bit when you make it 10 games, right? Because it's at the end of the regular season when Texas had a couple losses in there, but that included Bart Torvik has Texas as the number two most efficient defense in the country over the last 10 games, again, including before the tournament. So they are, they can play defense. We know that. They force turnovers in the postseason, right, in the March Madness and especially in the Big 12 tournament. So I started with offense, but it really all comes down to defense for me.
Yeah, and I think we said it. The defense has been traveling. The defense has gone with them. The defense has done its job in the last two tournament games and even in the Big 12 tournament. Texas has done its job. And I keep harping back to this, but the way that Rodney Terry has combined the defensive need from Texas with playing a little bit more up-tempo and giving a little bit more speed to the basketball has been really impressive. The final key, Kyle's keys to the game. Dylan Dissou. Can he do what he do against the Musketeers?
Gerald, can you do me a favor? Can you name your top five favorite big men from the greater Austin area in the past, let's call it 3 to 5 years, who have also played at Texas and at an SEC school?
How many options do I have? Is it just Dylan Dissou? Who else do I have?
It's Dylon, Dylon, Dylon.
Ah, yes, yes. It's right. I missed that.
Dylon and that Dylon. I was really trying to limit the scope so that there wasn't another to not confuse you, but in fact I did. That's right. As one of our all-time favorite clips and GIFs said, it's Dylon, 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 and Dylon. Dylan Dissou has been out of his mind. And I have a sneaky theory that it was all gamesmanship. There was some agreement, some handshake deal when Terry took over that said, Dylan, I can't unleash you yet. I can't uncage the beast. You are a secret weapon. You're going to average 8.5 points in the regular season, and then you're going to triple that in the postseason. That's what's going to happen. And D'Souza's like, cool. Yeah, I'm good with that. I believe that this conversation happened, maybe in, you know, a shoot around at the Mood, you know, maybe at the chili parlor, the cloakroom next to the Texas Capitol where all good backroom dealings happen. I don't know. But clearly Texas has buried their secret weapon up until they were able to unleash him. He broke the record the last game for field goals made in an NCAA or a Texas game in the NCAA tournament, right? Broke Kevin Durant's record. Then got a nice comparison from Kevin Durant, who gave him a LaMarcus Aldridge. The way his mid-game was working, he just was lights out efficient with the mid-range, was able to get what he wanted in the post. Don't know against a seven-footer who will likely be on him how he'll do that, but you also saw towards the end of the Colgate game when those bigs were just kind of leaning, when he just used his speed, which he also has, and got past, was kind of at the top of the key in the corner, at the elbow, rather, and then just sped past for a quick score at the rim. So it'll be curious to see how he attacks and what combination. But look, I'm half joking about them safing Dylan D'Souza. He only broke 20 minutes eight times before March. He only broke 25 minutes three times. Like a player who you were relying on in March Madness usually does not have those stats unless they're coming back from some egregious injury. And he was, but 2 years ago. All three of his double-digit rebounding performances have come in the postseason. He's averaging 18-9 in the postseason. If you just make it the tourney, he's averaging 22.5-10. He's been absolutely elite. We just have to keep him on the floor. That's the big thing. He needs to stay healthy, stay out of the trouble, and just be able to work his game.
And I think some of that depends on the officiating, right? Like, the officiating has been inconsistent, I think, in some of these games. And the NCAA tournament overall, but, you know, and the Big 12 is weird with officiating. He had three foul outs. He played eight games with four fouls, right? 14 games of his, he finished with three fouls. So, like, he's got to do better in not allowing the referees to decide his minutes, but also, like, will the referees let him play? And especially in a game where he's going to be part of a team that's going to try to have to bang down low a little bit with a seven-footer, like, are they going to let them play physical, or are they going to kind of have a quick whistle? I think we'll know early on in the game what that's going to be like, but he's got to do a better job of not letting the refs decide his playing time.
36 games have been played so far. 28 wins, I think, is their third most all time in school history. So they're in rarefied air here. But in 36 games of those, he has had 25 of them of the 36. He's been at least three fouls. Which three fouls is where it's like, do you get those all in the first half? Well, then you sit, you miss 10 minutes. Are you rusty when you come back in, right? Like, four fouls is, hey, one more and you're out. Five, obviously, you're fouling out. So, you know, where he gets those fouls matters for sure. But it is, for me, one of the big watch points in this game. I think if they can keep him on the floor, they can hit some threes, then there really is something here to this. I think if they play their defense, and look, Christian Bishop is a great big, like, especially in this game. I think his silkiness near the rim, where you're going to have to work around a seven-footer, I think he can play a big part. I'm not saying this is D'Souza or bust. I just think D'Souza is a weapon with his speed, with his length, with his size, his you know, willingness to rebound. He was hustling that first half, diving, breaking up passes. I mean, doing it all. If he's playing like that and he's that locked in, he looks like an All-American right now. Again, it's two games. It's a small sample size, or it's five if you go back to the beginning of March. But yeah, I mean, it is he is something, but he isn't the only thing. But I really think he's Kyle's key number three.
So if Texas can take care of the Musketeers, they'll be rewarded with either the Miami Hurricane, who absolutely blasted their first two opponents, Drake, by 63-56, and then 85-69 over Indiana. That was a bloodbath. Houston, for their trouble, beat Northern Kentucky by 11, and then just shredded Auburn 81-64. So that's the other matchup in the Sweet 16. Texas will take them on the winner of Houston, Miami in the Elite Eight if they're lucky enough to top the Musketeers.
All right, Gerald, let's take this bad boy home. Our second show of the week. We have one more segment that you may have been missing. Some of your favorite segments, some of your least favorite. I don't know. We love it. We're going to do a little bit of Godzillatron. What have you been watching, Gerald, on your giant Godzillatron size screen?
So I did not watch a ton this week. My family road tripped it to San Antonio to Schertz to visit my folks and spend my son's spring break with them. So I plowed through a couple of audiobooks, finished A Darker Shade of Magic is what it's called. It's It's got a wizard and a pirate, and they travel through parallel versions of London is probably the only thing I can say without spoiling much, but it's really interesting. I had a good time with it. It was a shorter read. It was a little more, brutal is not the right word, but it's called A Darker Shade of Magic, and it's a little darker, I think, in some spots than most your typical fantasy fare, but I really enjoyed it. It was a really fun read. And then I started Shadow of the Gods, which is another one that's a little more, it's a fantasy book that's a little on the darker or edgier side, but it's based, most fantasy books or tropes are based in British, British lore, or everybody has a British accent, right? Like A Darker Shade of Magic, there's three parallel Londons that they're traipsing through. Shadow of the Gods is actually based in Norse mythology and kind of Norse roots, and so it's a nice change of pace. It is very Viking, very, very, very brutal, but I'm enjoying it as well, but it deals a lot with, like I said, Norse mythology, and it's a nice change of pace from your very typical, most of your fantasy books, everybody has a British accent, so this has been fun to listen to, and then obviously caught up on The Mandalorian. Pedro Pascal continues to rule the world, and there's no two ways around that.
I need to start it. It's an admission of guilt right there. Gerald, what did I watch? I watched mainly March Madness. Look, I love the first round. I think I saw Twitter dialogue about why people think it's not the best for the revealing the true champion. I think they're idiotic. I thought adding the first four in would be bad. It's great too. I don't care. It's more basketball.
Don't have conference champions play in the first four.
Sure. But I do think that it is just a perfect sporting spectacle. This year fell on St. Paddy's Day, so people were certainly enjoying it out and about at bars. And it was great, right? One of my good friends I don't get to see very often, good friend of the show, Eric Verbit, came into town. Was nice to, have him here and watch games Friday with him. We watched tons of games we didn't care about, but you get into them because you're watching with a crowd and with buddies, watching it at a bar during March Madness on St. Paddy's Day. Hard to beat. Obviously, you can watch Thursday games outside of Texas. You could watch Saturday games. It was just a beautiful weekend, and I tried to not watch too much for my poor wife at home, but did catch a few choice games and the women's games as well, which, again, we recommend strongly to do. The only other thing I really watched, I started about the first 30 minutes, so I'm not going to go into a deep review, but I think it was just starting to get good is my thought. The Banshees of Inisherin, which I've been wanting to watch, and it's definitely one my wife watched the trailer and was like, nope, that's a you, which is fair. It's incredibly slow in the first 30 minutes. It seems like it's just picking up, but it's beautiful. It's fun little accents. Brendan Gleeson and Colin Farrell are phenomenal as the two mains, just in their Irishness. I'll see how well that performance carries out in the rest of the film, which is 2 hours. But it's, the setting seems great. I like what they're setting up. Again, it's an early to tell, but I did start that, and I loved In Bruges. I think it's sneakily one of my, I don't know if I'd say it's the best movie, but one of my 20 favorite movies. I just really love that. I thought it was funny. I thought it was witty. I thought it was well written, well directed, well everything. And so I had a pretty high hopes for this. So we'll see where we land on this one. But I watched so much basketball, I didn't hardly have time to watch anything else.
And that's all we've got for you this week. Kyle, where can the good folks find you on the internet?
Oh, you can follow me on Twitter at Kyle Carbon. You can also follow Texas Pregamer at Texas Pregamer.
You can follow me on Twitter. I am at GH Goodridge. Follow the show on Twitter at Longhorn Pod. Facebook and Instagram, The Longhorn Republic. Or shoot us an email, longhornrepublicpod@gmail.com. NCAA.com. We'll be back on Tuesday with your recap to the second weekend of the NCAA tournament. But until then, hook 'em.
Hook 'em. What good is one musketeer?